Hey there, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to Tubular Time Machine, the podcast that cranks the nostalgia dial all the way to 11. I'm your host, Jason Raz Rasmussen, and each week we jump into our gnarly retro ride and rocket back to a specific year between 1971 and 2000, reliving the raddest music, movies, TV shows, video games, toys, slang, and pop culture moments that made growing up in the United States so totally bodacious. But I'm not flying solo. Every episode features a special co-host who was exactly 14 years old that year, ready to dish on everything from mixtapes and mall food courts to butterfly clips and blowing into NES cartridges like a wizard. So grab your slap bracelet, rewind your cassette, and fire up the Tubular Time Machine, where the past is always rad and the vibes never go out of style. This week on Tubular Time Machine, we're cranking up the mixtape and setting the dial to 1988. A rad time to be 14 years old, full of neon dreams, epic soundtracks, and the kind of pop culture magic that never really left us. And who better to help us navigate the gnarly vibes of 88 than my totally tubular co-host? He's the author of When It Was Worth Playing For, the definitive deep dive into the golden days of Survivor, back when alliances were shaky, torches were sacred, and tribal councils were drama. He's also the master of the microphone over at Staff Picks, a podcast that gives love to the underrated and overlooked gems of the movie world. When he's not writing, podcasting, or geeking out over classic cinema, he's spending Halloween doing what he loves most, scaring unsuspecting children, in the most festive way possible, of course. He's a fellow movie nerd, a pop culture historian, and someone who can quote the Zucker Brothers films like a second language. Please welcome the one and only Mario Lanza.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Jason. Thank you for the wonderful introduction.
This doesn't give you enough credit. You got so much more, and you know, I'm so happy to have you here.
Yeah, I do a lot. It's always interesting when people say, "How would you describe yourself to people?" I'm like, "Well, just say I do a lot of pop culture stuff."
Pop culture is the bomb, and this one of the whole points of this podcast is going into that pop culture rabbit hole and finding out about, in your case, 1988, going into that rabbit hole when you were 14 years old.
Oh yeah, this is an interesting year for me. I am a pop culture sponge. I have absorbed all this stuff over the years. People have said I have a freaky good memory, that I remember the tiniest details. And yeah, this is a year for me that was quite significant, and I'm very excited to talk about it and see what you've come up with here.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons I wanted to do 14, because I think 14 is one of those years that we really kind of come into ourselves. And you had some fantastic films and TV shows in 1988 that really bring that out. So I figured if we want to start this path, all we're going to do is shoot the bull and talk about the things we loved. And so in this case, 1988 had some fantastic films. What was one of your tops, do you think, or do you have a particular favorite of that year?
First of all, I have to say, I'm glad you chose the age of 14 for all your guests. So you've picked everyone when they were at their most awkward. So good choice, Jason. Okay, movies. Yeah, it's funny that you picked 1988 for this, because my all-time favorite comedy movie is in 1988. It came out towards the end of the year. I believe, was it summer or the end of the year? I kind of forget. July of 1988, my all-time favorite comedy. And a lot of people don't know this about me, but A Fish Called Wanda is the greatest comedy that's ever been made.
Oh, man, how can you not love A Fish Called Wanda? It's Monty Python revisited, practically.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that I saw that movie, and I laughed so hard. And I, to this day, I still love it. And I always point out to people, if you want to see how well a screenplay can be written for a comedy, watch A Fish Called Wanda. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, Kevin Kline was amazing. Jamie Lee Curtis was at the height of her sexual, peak, I guess you could say. I don't know when she was the sexiest. Michael Palin was fantastic in it. You know, it just all across the board. John Cleese is John Cleese as he is in everything. But I mean, it's just a fantastic film.
Yeah, and what was interesting is that I didn't see that in the theater. So I don't know if I saw it in 88. I might not have seen it until 89, but my parents were real strict when I was a kid, and I'm 14, and I'm not allowed to see R-rated movies, and they were not bending on that, so I didn't see a lot. But I know I saw it on video the next year, and let me just point out, R-rated comedies are much different than PG-rated comedies. So that one jumped up quite a bit in the adultness for me.
At 14, yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. So yeah. What about Fish Called Wanda really drew you in? Why is that one your favorite out of curiosity?
I will say more than anything, it's Kevin Kline, but not really Kevin Kline. Like, I don't really like British comedies all that much. Like, I appreciate the Monty Python, but I don't worship them like most people. But what I love about The Fish Called Wanda is that it's kind of a half British, half American movie. And half the movie is British people making fun of Americans and then American people making fun of the British. So I just love all the little digs at the culture. That's my favorite thing about that movie.
Yep. Don't call me stupid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's one line in there where Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Kline accuses Jamie Lee Curtis of being into John Cleese, and she says, "I'm not into necrophilia, thank you very much," which I've always loved that line.
Yeah, that's a classic, yep. And poor Ken and his fish. Yeah. Oh, poor Ken.
Yeah, that, to me, that's the funniest movie. Although, honestly, I could make an argument that the three funniest movies of the 80s all came out in 1988. I'm gonna go on my limb here and say that.
Oh yeah, okay. So let's see. If that'd be the case, my guess would be Coming to America might be one of your faves.
No, that's not one. No. Good choice though. Good choice. Okay. People, I want to put this into perspective for people. Coming to America was like the biggest movie ever. Every kid alive wanted to see that, and I was not allowed to because I was only 14. But that was one of the great white whales. But no, that is not one of my, I would not argue, one of the three funniest movies of this year.
Okay, now I'm intrigued. What is your second one here?
The hardest I have ever laughed in a movie theater. And again, I'm a big movie guy, but you did allude to this earlier that I can quote the Zucker Brothers verbatim. The Naked Gun is about the funniest movie I've ever seen in the theater. I remember literally falling out of my seat. My stomach hurt so hard because I was laughing so hard during the baseball scene at the end of The Naked Gun.
Ah, yes. It was starting with the Star Spangled Banner.
Absolutely, yeah. Pitch it. To this day, I still, whenever I make fantasy baseball leagues or anything like that, I always put a picture on there, Dave Spiewak, because he's the pitcher of the Angels in The Naked Gun.
It's Enrico Palazzo. Was it Enrico Palazzo? Is that what
Absolutely,
it is?
Yeah. He's the opera singer.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I would argue A Fish Called Wanda, The Naked Gun, and I always talk about this other movie as one of the great underloved gems of the 80s. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels comes right out at the end of the year of 88.
Oh, yeah. You know, I still use that. I use that line all the time, particularly on my students. You know, pardon me, may I go to the bathroom?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I saw that one in the theater, and I remember just laughing and laughing. And that's what I want to cover on my movie podcast, Staffix. But right there, I'm going to say 88. People can take Ghostbusters. People can take Caddyshack, all these other 80s movies. I would say maybe the three funniest movies of the 80s all came out in 88.
Okay, I can go for that. I will take Ghostbusters overall, though. But
that's fine.
But I, as you know, I have been introducing my sons to the important classic movies. And several weeks back was The Naked Gun. So
good choice. Loved it. Yeah. And again, I'd make the argument that's the funniest of the Zucker Brothers movies, which is really kind of an outlandish claim because Airplane's out there. But The Naked Gun is the hardest I've ever laughed in a movie theater.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. I think I'd still put Airplane above it, but because actually both of them have so many great quotable lines.
Yeah, they're both great.
At 14, though, like you said, oh man, 14, seeing a Zucker Brothers movie in the theater, I can totally agree with you on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to remember that in 1988, Airplane was already 8 years old. So it's kind of an old movie. And it wasn't really a movie of my generation. Naked Gun is my generation.
Yeah. And that's the point of the whole podcast here is to get the feel of what you experienced at 14. Because you're just a few years behind me. You're 3 years behind me. So, you know, I want to see how your experience was. Because 3 years, it doesn't seem like much, but it's still a pretty big difference.
Well, it is. And people have to remember that's a difference between a freshman and a senior in high school. That's a significant difference. A lot happens in 3 years. So, yeah, yeah. So what year were you born?
71.
Okay. So you're 3 years older than me. Yeah. Yeah. I was an interesting pick for this one. I know you want to get people who are 14 years old in these years. I was not a traditional or a typical kid. So a lot of the answers you're going to get from me are not the stuff that you would get from other guests, because I was just an odd kid. But comedy movies was my thing. I know every comedy. I could list every single movie I saw in a theater that year. I was looking through, and I can remember where and when I saw them.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that, because comedy and myself were big, too. And and with Monty Python being out there, you know, and being on PBS late at night, you know, it's like not many people knew about it. But I loved that dry, British humor and things. So when you talk about Fish Called Wanda, this really tied in really well.
Yeah, that's my thing. And a lot of people don't love that movie like you and I do. So that's not like a big typical thing. I'm just looking at the list of all the movies that came out in 88. And I'm always reminded of how mediocre a lot of 80s comedies were.
They were very, commercial. They were very systematic, as this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They do the job just well enough to get you to see it, but it's not like a piece of art. And again, I'll just go in through the list here of 88 movies I saw in the theater. Police Academy 5, Operation Miami Beach. I saw that. Crocodile Dundee 2. I saw that. Funny Farm, The Great Outdoors, Short Circuit 2, Big Top Pee Wee. Like, there's a lot of stuff. Caddyshack 2. I saw that in the theater.
God, I'm sorry.
Yeah, these were not great movies, but they were just there. You'd see them. And this is one thing I want to get across to people. People would just go to the movies every weekend back in the 80s. So you just see stuff even if it wasn't great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's very different today now with the streaming services and stuff. But
absolutely.
You leave out one of the best Christmas movies ever made.
Scrooge today?
No, Die Hard.
Oh, Die Hard. Okay, I'm going to give one of my deep, dark secrets here. This is going to blow your mind.
Uh-oh.
I have never seen Die Hard.
Oh, my brain.
I know. Everyone's got a movie. Again, I run a movie podcast. I am an encyclopedia of movies. I know every movie pretty much ever made. And that's, everyone's got one deep, dark secret. That's the one I've never seen. I've never seen Die Hard, and I've never wanted to see Die Hard.
Oh, my heart. My heart just stopped.
I know. I told you I'm not your typical kid, Jason. I'm going to mess with you.
But you're older now. You're wiser. You need to understand why it's a Christmas movie.
I know, but I've heard so much about that movie, and I don't really like Bruce Willis movies, and I don't really like just straight action movies. And eventually, that became my thing that I haven't seen Die Hard. So now I'm like stubborn about it.
Oh, turkey.
Yeah, I thought you were going to talk about Scrooged, because Scrooged came out right before that.
And Scrooged was out in 88.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Scrooged was one of the ones that I still enjoy. I watch it fairly regularly still. Mm-hmm. Bill Murray and that's just great, Bobcat Goldthwait. Bobcat Goldthwait was great, overall, Scrooge is one of those ones that I'll check it out every few years. But how about you?
I like Scrooge. It's not something I watch all that much. I like Bill Murray when he's funnier. Like that one, he's trying to be more serious, and I don't really like his serious stuff. So, but it's not bad. I'll watch it if it's on, but it's not, again, there's better movies I like.
Now there's one movie I'll talk about here, and then we can move on to TV if you'd like. But for me, I very much remember in 1988 mm-hmm. going to the Cinedome up near Sacramento, California, and having the entire Cinedome outside painted with Who Framed Roger Rabbit paintings and like long lines to go see the film. I mean, this was a mix of all different kinds of animation from different studios, different things. The licensing on it, I never understood how they got it all, but Who Framed Roger Rabbit was huge that year.
Oh, absolutely. I've talked about that. I've done an episode on Staff Picks on Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's the most interesting thing because that's probably one of the biggest 20 event movies of my lifetime. It was such a big deal. And it's kind of forgotten nowadays. And so I don't really understand why it dropped off the face of the earth. Because like you said, that was the big movie that summer. That everybody talked about that movie.
Oh, yeah. I do believe that Disney World or Disneyland, I can't remember which one, just recently added a whole new section with Roger Rabbit, and they have like the dip, and then a guy comes out dressed like Christopher Lloyd and lowers a shoe into the dip and all that.
Oh, you must be talking about Disney World, because I live in Southern California. Disneyland has had Toontown ever since the 90s, so that's been a staple. But yeah, the whole Who Framed Roger Rabbit world over there.
So there, one last side note on 88 films. It was the beginning of one of my favorite franchises with Child's Play. So okay. I'm a huge Chucky fan. I've seen everything Chucky, and I love Chucky.
Yeah, I've seen some of those. I don't really like or dislike Child's Play. But for me, there was two other horror movies that year that are actually kind of a big deal. And one is Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
I knew Halloween was going to come up.
Yeah, well, that was a big deal because, like, I don't like most of the sequels. I just like 1 and 2. That's my all-time favorite horror movie, Halloween. But it was a big deal in 88 because Michael Myers had been dead since 81 and they had not brought him back. Halloween 3 is not about Michael Myers. So in 88, this is 7 years later, they finally bring him back into the franchise. So that is a significant moment in horror history people should know about.
Okay, and what was the other one?
Friday the 13th, Part 7, where Jason meets Carrie. That was a big deal because Jason, they were still cranking out Friday the 13th movies, and I was big into Friday the 13th lore and mythology and movies back then, which are very ironic for a kid who couldn't watch R-rated movies, but I knew all those movies pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Those were the movies that at 14, we went to our friend's house to have a sleepover, and there may have been a bootleg VHS tape or something along those lines involved with those evenings.
Oh, yeah. If you have a friend who has cable or owns a VCR, those are the best friends to go to their house for sleepovers. I watched a lot of forbidden R-rated movies.
Absolutely. That's what it was about, teenagerhood in the 80s.
It was the greatest. Yeah, you were constantly trying to watch forbidden stuff, and there was so many ways to do it. And I don't know if our parents didn't realize this or what, but yeah, cable late at night, friends' houses, sneaking into the horror section of video stores and just reading the box and trying to imagine what it was like. It was really great times. I love that stuff.
Now, did you ever have it to where you didn't have cable, but you had the static in the background that every once in the blue moon you could kind of sort of see an image?
Yes, without giving too much away. Yes, if you scroll to the really high channels on the cable dial, you'd get the scrambled images. I'm going to say, if you've seen American Pie, you know the opening scene in that movie is very historically accurate, because every so often you could catch some body parts.
Yep. Oh man. See, this is what the podcast is all about, you know.
Oh yeah, these memories. Yeah, we're letting loose our secrets on the younger generation. We saw a lot of stuff we were not. It's funny. I was just talking to someone who younger than me the other day, and we were talking about horror movies. And she's like, "I can't believe your parents introduced you to all those weird horror movies when you were a kid." And I'm like, "Introduced crap. I'd find them on my own. My parents didn't show me crap."
Yep.
Can I talk about one other horror movie? There's one other thing that's very significant in 88.
Yeah, what's that?
I don't know if this would mean much to you, but to me it would. So in 1979 or 78, there was a very niche but cult horror movie called Phantasm.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember as a kid, I'd never heard of this movie. It was not a big mainstream thing in the 80s, but in 88, they said Phantasm 2 coming out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there was a Phantasm 1? I'd never heard of Phantasm 1. So it was kind of a big deal that they restored this franchise 9 years later and came out with a sequel. So I'll always, when I'm looking at this movie list, Phantasm 2 jumped out at me. That, oh yeah, that movie, that sequel came out of nowhere in 88.
Yeah, that one was the ball with the spike on it and the creepy, not graveyard keeper, but it looked like a graveyard keeper kind of guy.
Yeah, he's the mortician, the tall man. He owns the mortuary. Okay, no. one more thing. I know you want to move on, but this is a really historic movie year, and I want people to grasp that if they're listening to this podcast. The movie Colors, I'm looking at the list of movies that came out in 88. That was one of the biggest things ever, because it was like the Crips versus the Bloods movie, and he had Sean Penn and Robert Duvall, and they had like shootings at the theater. Like, they couldn't show it in theaters because people would have gang violence outside. That was a big deal. I remember that in 88.
The Bloods versus the Crips, yeah.
Like, you cannot think about 88 without thinking Colors. Yeah, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Coming to America, Rain Man, Big. This was just a big year for movies. I'm just looking at this list and I was kind of shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things that's fun pulling up lists for different people here is that, like, oh yeah, that one came out then. That one came out. Oh, I would have loved to have been alive that one. See, 85, I can't wait to talk about my year because I mean, we had some big ones come out in 85.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's Back to the Future, right?
Yep. Yeah. I think, honestly, in film, the 84, 85, 86 trio is three of the best years of film in general.
Yeah, you can make a good argument. I'm a little jealous. Those aren't my years. In fact, I've often joked about this, that I don't really have a teen movie. Most kids in the 80s had a teen movie like the John Hughes movies or My Bodyguard or Fast Times. But by the time that I'm a teenager in high school in 89, 90, 91, 92, I don't really have a teen movie. They didn't really have any. The closest I have is like Say Anything or maybe Wayne's World, but I'm a little too young for the John Hughes movies, and I was kind of jealous of that.
Okay, so we've done some good job covering a bunch of the movies there. Let's move on to television shows that were popular in 88. We had some, you know, that are still, you know, they have been reboot, they have been redone, all these things over the years. And so what do you think on this? I think Roseanne was one of the number one TV shows that came out in 88.
Yeah, if I recall, just looking at this list, the stuff that was new that year was The Wonder Years and Roseanne. Those were like the two big rookie shows. Yep. I love The Wonder Years. I watched that a lot. I didn't really watch Roseanne. I had a lot of friends who did. I'll be kind of mean here. It was a little too white trashy for me. I didn't really like it. But I remember a lot of the kids in my class liked Moonlighting too, which was a little too adult for me.
Yeah, I think I didn't really fit the Moonlighting category either. It may be because you don't like Bruce Willis, but yeah, you know, it was never really one of those ones I latched onto. Now, Wonder Years, though, as a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old, there was definitely one thing about that show that we all watched for.
Are we talking Winnie Cooper?
Winnie Cooper. Yeah. She still looks great today.
Yeah, that is my wife's all-time favorite show. We have every episode here on DV. She's always watching it in the background. So I'm pretty familiar with it, and I watched it. I didn't watch it all the way to the end, but certainly in 88, almost everybody in America watched The Wonder Years because it had just started.
Yeah, and it was a good one. It was pre Quantum Leap, you know, so doing this time travel thing was a fun kind of thing to see about life during the time.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Quantum Leap. I think Quantum Leap debuted in the end of 88. I think it came out right at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And they reboot that one. See, they reboot Quantum Leap. They reboot Roseanne. They've reboot Full House. You know, all these ones have new versions of them these days.
Yeah, and they rebooted The Cosby Show, too, right?
Yeah, the Barbara Cosby Show. You beat me to the punch.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Making the introduction to the show here, you know, was kind of like, oh yeah, going back to the 80s and all that and pop culture, and there's TV shows like the Cosby Show. you know, take a look at it with a very different light these days.
Oh yeah, 88, it's really interesting. I'm like, 88 is really kind of the transition between the 80s and the 90s. Like, we're very late in the 80s here. And I was shocked when I was looking at the list of the shows that were on. I didn't realize The Cosby Show was still on in 88. I didn't realize Golden Girls was still on. TV's Bloopers and Practical Jokes, Family Ties. I didn't realize these were all still going in 88.
Yeah, Bloopers and Practical Jokes, man. I loved that show.
That was a great show. And I was shocked. I think it was on like Friday night towards the end of 88. I'm like, they were still trotting Ed McMahon out there in late 88. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was Johnny still on? Johnny was off the air by then, I think. Was he?
No, Johnny was still there. Okay, I have a lot to say about this if you want to go into late night TV.
Yeah, we can talk about late night. This is the whole thing. We just go off on a tangent whenever we want.
Oh, yeah. I was a big nerd, and this is where I said, I'm not your typical kid. Like, you're going to want to talk about 80s fashion and 80s TV show and 80s music. Like, I don't really know a lot of that stuff, but late night TV was my thing. I did not miss an episode of Late Night with David Letterman when I was 14 and 13. I was watching this religiously, and I was watching The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, but really only when Jay Leno was the co-host. Jay Leno was the permanent co-host back then. He would do every Monday, I think. So I would watch those every single night. And to this day, I still have not missed an episode of Saturday Night Live since about 1986. So in 88, I was all about these late night shows.
Now, I watched SNL back then, loved mm-hmm. SNL back then. You know, they had the great cast in the 80s or late 80s, or mm-hmm. mid to late 80s, you know, that
late
time. 80s.
Late 80s, yeah.
And I was never a person that stayed up too late to watch things. But when I did, it was always pretty much Letterman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the thing. That so much of my personality, my sense of humor, the way I talk, my language choice, my thought process is based on David Letterman about 1987, 88, because I had a little this TV in my room back then. It was like the size of a laptop, and it had a tape recorder built into it. I don't even know why, but you could record the audio off TV, and I would record the audio of Letterman every single night and just listen to it over and over to get his cadence down because he was my hero.
Yeah. Back then, actually, they had on the radio, they had comedy clips from different comedians mm-hmm. every week. And I did the same thing with the comedy clips every week. So this is where I learned an appreciation for a bunch of different ones like McCarlin and, mm-hmm. you know, even like Paula Poundstone. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there were a ton of them back then, that, you know, Rodney Dangerfield. I just, you know, do the same thing. I'd record it and listen to it and listen to it and listen to it.
Yeah. And that was great. And that was, again, most kids my age weren't doing that. So I always kind of said I had a little older sense of humor than most of my peers because they're watching like Head of the Class or ALF and stuff on TV. I'm listening to Letterman every night and SNL. So yeah, that was a big thing for me in 88 that people have to really realize what a big deal this late night stuff was for these budding young comedy writers.
And we're more highbrow, you know, with our comedy, you know?
Oh yes. Yeah. I'm not watching just the 10 of us like my peers.
So
although you know I did watch just the 10 of us because I had a huge crush on Heather Langenkamp, so I did watch that show.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, and then she was on just the 10 of us trying to make it as a comedic actress, and it wasn't really a very good show, but I thought she was very cute when I was 14.
Yep, the curly hair, well, not curly, but somewhat curly, wavy, you know.
Kind of adorkable, my favorite type of girl. She was adorkable.
Yep, perfect. Mm-hmm. I know I saw a couple of here on the list that might have been a little more out there in regards to television in 88. Mm-hmm. Now, one of my wife and I's favorite series is Red Dwarf. You know, that was a BBC one. So to see it in the United States was not probably very common. Another one, of course, on top of that was The Kids in the Hall, which was Canadian, you know, sketch comedy. And again, they just, you know, reboot that one recently. But one of the biggest ones, which is still going today on and off, was MST3K, Mystery Science Theater 3000, started on the local cable channel in Minnesota.
Yeah, that is one of my all-time specialty shows. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a Misty. I have a pretty encyclopedic knowledge of that show. I've introduced to so many people to it over the years. But I was not watching it yet in 88. Like you said, it was still in Minnesota. It hadn't made it to Comedy Central. I don't think there even was a Comedy Central yet. So yeah, I didn't start watching that one until 93, perhaps. So we're still good at 5 years away from me on that one.
Yeah, it's just worthy of recognizing the fact that such a fantastic show that's lasted so long started in that year and stuff. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And if people want to seek out those 1988 episodes on KTMA in Minnesota, they are terrible. Don't seek them out. You won't enjoy them.
Exactly. I've seen them there, and at least a couple of them. And yeah, it's eye bleeding.
Yeah, it's not good. Although there's one show we have not mentioned here. This is one. So again, it was very forbidden for me to watch really racy R-rated offensive stuff. My parents were very like hawks on me. And there was one TV show they did not want me watching whatsoever in 88, because this was like the king of all offensive TV shows. People have to know the Fox network had just started. So it's kind of brand new. And Married with Children, I would seek out that show anytime I could. I had a cousin named Gabriel who loved it and would tape it for me and get me episodes on the sly. That was the funniest thing. And there was no equivalent to that on TV prior to that show. That has to be pointed out.
Oh, no, absolutely. And we talk about, you know, the fact that we saw the scrambled the cable channels. Mm-hmm. We had crushes on Winnie Cooper, but oh man, Christina Applegate. I had the teen book of posters, you know, from Married with Children, which had several little mini posters of Christina Applegate, and I crushed on her then. I'll still crush on her now.
Well, yeah, not only her, but like every episode had like strippers and porn stars, and Tia Carrere was on there, and Mila Jovovich was on there once as a foreign exchange student. Just the sheer amount of hot girls on that show. Yeah, a 14-year-old boy. Yeah, go ahead.
Like you said, it was racy as heck, man. And yeah, okay, go back to your 14-year-old boy.
Yeah, well, yeah, 14-year-old boy would appreciate that show very much. That was unscrambled porn, basically.
and of course, Al still stands up to this day as just being the I got to work this job and come home. And
oh, yeah. I still argue to this day, like the first three seasons of that show are some of the funniest sitcom episodes you're ever going to see. And it was so great. Just the early, I don't like it after a while, but it started off so strong. And again, there was nothing like that on TV. It was so controversial.
No, that's good. I mean, we had some good stuff back then. I mean, of course, like I said, us, but you were the 14-year-old, you know, but we even had the incredibly horrible. I mean, and I adore Freddy Krueger. Uh-huh. So we had Freddy's Nightmares that came out in 88.
Absolutely.
Oh, God, that was bad.
I'm looking at the list here. There's actually one show here that I have not mentioned that it was a. If you had asked me at 14, other than Late Night with David Letterman and SNL and all that, if you'd asked me for my favorite show, my favorite sitcom, I would have said, you know, the funniest thing on TV right now is Perfect Strangers.
Oh, yeah.
I love that show. And this was before it was on like, what is it, the Friday, the. I always forget the name of it, the one with the Full House. They have the block of stuff on Friday. But this is before that. It used to be on Wednesday or Tuesday. It was kind of a standalone. And it was like the only slapstick show on TV. So I want to give a shout out to, at 14, I would have said I watched Perfect Strangers religiously.
Yeah, Belky Bartokomus, is it?
Yeah, Belky Bartokomus and his buddy, Mark Lynn Baker, as the straight man, Cousin Larry, doing all the hard work and selling all the jokes.
I'm looking through the list as well, and this is kind of funny. This apparently was the year that they decided to throw the caution to the wind with animated TV series, because they had a RoboCop animated TV series and a Police Academy animated TV series.
Wow. I'm surprised there wasn't like I Spit on Your Grave, the TV series, or anything like that.
Oh, that's one on my list. I was going to actually watch this weekend, the original.
I wouldn't do that. Yeah. It's not pleasant. Anyway, that's not 88 though. We can't talk about that.
No. You and I could talk movies all day long.
Oh yeah. A little more TV here. Just looking at this list. I can't vouch for this stretch of TV, but I remember for some reason watching 227 and Amen. There was a, I think it was a Friday night thing on ABC. It was like 227, Amen, and then Golden Girls was still kicking around. I remember watching a lot of 227 and Amen, and I couldn't tell you why, other than I guess it was just on and people watched what was on.
Nope, I watched 227. I don't think I watched Amen, but yeah, 227 on the block, whatever there.
Yeah, with Jack Hay. Yeah.
Yep, Jack Hay, exactly. Yeah. She still looks the same today as she did back then.
That's unbelievable. She has great genes.
Vampire.
Okay, yeah. Well, let me say one other thing. So, like I said, I was an odd kid. I wasn't your typical kid. That this is gonna sound like a humble brag, and I don't mean to. I'm just trying to put stuff in perspective here. So I was in this gifted class when I was a kid, and the way they did it in the Bellevue School District, I was in Seattle, Washington, right outside Seattle was in Bellevue, is that the gifted kids were kind of in their own little world. We didn't really mix with the general ed kids. Like, we hardly ever shared classes with them. And 88 was my last year in the gifted classes before we went into high school. So a lot of the gifted kids in my class watched Head of the Class, which was a TV show at the time about a gifted class. I didn't like that show because it was too similar to my own life, just a bunch of nerds sitting around talking about nerd crap. But that was a big deal. And that was basically what my life was like at the time, just hanging out with nerds all day. I never really interacted with other kids. Yep. But like I said, the gifted kids in my class, they all loved Moonlighting. That was, for some reason, they liked this older stuff like that. So it's interesting. I just want to talk about this, that 88 through 89 was the year I went from middle school to high school. I left this gifted class. I went into general ed in high school for the first time. And so I was quite shocked. So this was my year of 88 going into gen ed for the first time. And I'd never really been around gen ed kids. It was just a different world for me.
Head of the class, that was what, Howard Hefner?
Howard Hessman. Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Hessman. Yeah. So that show was very close to what my life was like at the time. Just the same 12 kids in the class all day, every day. I never saw the rest of the school.
See, had they come in with a camera into your classroom, it could have been like the first version of The Office, you know, with the, you know,
absolutely
following people around.
Yeah, I was basically Jawaharlal. Hopefully at least two people get that joke.
Okay, so I think we've done a good job uncovering TV. Uh-huh. How about music now? You know, there's a bunch of good music that came out, but I'm curious on what your opinion is of this period of time.
All right, Jason, this is where it gets real here. I've told you many times, I'm an odd choice to have on a retrospective 80s podcast because I was not your typical kid. I didn't know any 80s songs in the 80s. Listened to was 60s songs. My dad trained me when I was a kid to listen to oldies. So I know the Beach Boys, the Beatles, the Four Seasons and stuff. The only person I listened to in the 80s was Weird Al. That's the only person I know. And I only know popular songs if Weird Al did a parody of them.
Weird Al, man. I got my autograph from him at a Tower Records mm-hmm. near my house back then. That was first CD I ever bought was Fat.
Yep.
Or not Fat. What was the actual album?
Even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, that's the first CD I ever bought.
Yeah, I think that came out in 88. And that's literally, and that's literally all I would have been listening to. And this is where my wife always makes fun of me. Like in the 90s, I would hear 80s songs for the first time and I'd never heard them before. I remember I heard Come On Eileen by Dexy's Midnight Runners. I heard that in 98 for the first time. And my wife was like, how have you never heard that before? And I just didn't listen to music.
You're very similar in regards to this with my son. My son, you know, he plays jazz. He plays electric bass in the jazz band. Mm-hmm. And he likes music from the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Yeah.
And he won't listen to anything current. You know, he hates current music. But he'll listen to, you know, the jazz and all that kind of thing. You know, and particularly music from like the Fallout, the TV show, that kind of music, mm-hmm. you know. And so, yeah, his knowledge of 2020s music is minimal at best.
Oh, yeah. And that was me at the time. Like, I love 80s music now. The 88 is not my favorite year. I like earlier 80s stuff. But 88's not bad. But I would not have known these songs at the time, like Wham or Heaven is a Place on Earth. Like, I would never have heard these songs. I knew Michael Jackson. I knew, like, We Are the World, stuff that maybe if I turned on MTV, I would hear it. But I would have never listened to the radio for music ever as a kid.
But, of course, Rick Rolling was not invented at the time, so you're safe.
Yeah, that's true. It was much later. And I do know that. I do remember once I was at the Bellevue Boys and Girls Club playing basketball. I was a big athlete back in 88. I was really tall. And I remember that Rick Astley song came on the first time. So I had heard that once at a basketball game. That's one of the few songs I would have heard.
Okay, so we can pretty much skip over 80s 88 music.
Well, how about you? I want to hear your opinions on 88 music because I kind of know it now.
Well, we're kind of at the height of the big hair bands in 88, starting to get bigger, but big hair bands. So like Guns N' Roses was really huge that year. And so those were big. Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin. Everybody was whistling that song everywhere kind of thing. You know, Michael Jackson was still on the top of the charts, you know, as expected. You know, but like you said, actually, I 100% agree. I was a Weird Al head. You know, I had the cassette tape. Mm-hmm. First CD, I would be out mowing the lawn listening to Weird Al. We're going to Weird Al in September for the umpteenth time seeing him live. Mm-hmm. I sang with Weird Al Yankovic the last time he came through.
Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's always my claim to fame, that I often would hear the Weird Al parody before I heard the original song. So like, I might have heard Fat before I heard Bad.
I think that's with me nowadays with Weird Al. Whenever he releases a new song, it's like, what's that from? I have no clue.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that was, I remember that Even Worse album. This is Weird Al's fourth album. And it came out in 88. And I always remember one of the songs on there is this song is just six words long, which makes fun of the George Harrison song, which I had heard. I had heard that song. I Got My Mind Set on You, which had come out, I think, the year before.
Now, Even Worse was a great one. I think my favorite was Dare to Be Stupid, but it went Weird Al in 3D, Dare to Be Stupid, then Even Worse.
I think you're leaving out Polka Party.
Oh yeah, Polka Party. Polka Party was Polka Party was right before Even Worse.
Yeah, so that's why I'm getting mixed up with this fourth or fifth album. But yeah, that's my entire year of 88 was either, Weird Al songs, or I was big into the WWF and the pro wrestling at that time. And they had put out an album where the wrestlers sing songs. And I kind of knew that album too. And these were literally the only two albums I owned.
Well, actually, you know, talking about 88 and pro wrestling, I mean, like I was into WWF back in that day.
Yeah, everybody was. It was mainstream.
I think I loved Andre the Giant. Just seeing him out there and stuff, how huge he was. Wrestling was something for me is a big deal because I'm not a sports guy, you know. And so watching wrestling, I had my parents pay for a pay-per-view, one of the WrestleManias.
Yeah, we kind of left out wrestling on TV. I guess we should have mentioned that because this was a big deal for kids our age. Like the WWF, almost everybody watched that at that time.
Yeah, did you have a favorite?
I was a big Junkyard Dog fan.
Oh, yeah.
But then later, as I got older, I came to appreciate the Honky Tonk Man, how good he is at riling up a crowd. And I love people that are like that.
I like the Iron Sheik as well.
Oh, yeah.
Rowdy Piper.
This is a big moment for Rowdy Piper. He had just dropped out of the WWF in 87 or 88 and made a movie, They Live. So he was, I forget if he or Jesse Ventura was the first one to leave and try to make it mainstream. I guess Hulk Hogan and Rocky III. But yeah, Rowdy Piper was a big person right here.
Did you ever do They Live on Staff Picks?
I have not done that yet. It's I waffle on that one if I love it that much. Like I like parts of it, but it gets old after a while. I don't know if it's a great movie overall.
It's good about society today.
It is. It says a lot about society. Yeah. They Live is a fun, very niche movie from 88 that not a lot of people would have seen at the time.
Okay. So music, we kind of just skimmed over, which is perfectly fine. Comic books, any particular, did you read comic books back in this day?
No, that wasn't like I was nerdy, but not in a comic book way. I would have been into, I think I might have still been into He-Man and Transformers and Superpowers toys, and they kind of had tie-in comic books, but none of the mainstream stuff like Spider-Man or anything.
I think really the only thing that jumped out at me, I read X-Men back then. I read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I had the original comic book, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic book. I had it in my collection at one time, and I don't know where it went because it's worth a lot of money now. But Batman the Killing Joke was one of the best graphic novels ever made.
Okay. I have a funny trivia thing about the Turtles, the Ninja Turtles. So in 80, when did the original Turtles comic book came out? 85, I would guess?
It's 85, 86, somewhere in there.
Okay. I was in Canada in 86. This has nothing to do with 88. It's just about the Turtles. We were at Expo 86 in Vancouver. And my friend found a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle ripoff comic book called Radioactive Adolescent. Was it Black Belt Hamsters?
Adolescent Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters.
Was that it? It was something like that, but it was a total ripoff and it was a Canadian version. We thought that was the funniest thing that there was a hamsters ripoff version of the Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah. I had those as well.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember going to Cosmic Comics in the Birdcage Walk up near Sacramento there and going to the comic shop there. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That for some reason, comic books wasn't my thing. I remember maybe in the '80s at one point I bought a Green Lantern comic book because I like Green Lantern. He was my favorite superhero. And I remember it was the one where he like gets killed with a, he gets killed and they replace him with the black Green Lantern. And I'm like, you can't kill Green Lantern. So I remember I swore off comic books after that. You can't kill superheroes.
Well, Killing Joke was pretty dark for the time.
Yeah, that was a, I always want to read my stories about my superhero. Don't kill Green Lantern. It was like a construction site. They killed him with some kind of gun that shot screws or something. It was Hal Jordan.
Oh, Hal.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Hal.
Yep.
Okay, so your comic books weren't your thing either there. That's okay. We're just going through the list here. How about toys? I mean, you just already brought up some of the big ones there, and this is a huge year for toys.
Yeah, see, 88, I was a big toy guy in the 80s, but 88, you're 14. 14's a little old for the toys. You're kind of phasing out of them. Like, I probably still had my Transformers. I know I still had all my He-Man. I think if I recall, in 88, I was probably big into these superpowers. This is they had just started releasing all the superheroes as toys, and I was big into them because I liked the paint job. I thought they were really cool looking. So I had the Green Lantern, the Hawkman, the Superman. I had all those. So that was the only toy I probably still had in 88, other than probably all the WWF wrestling figures, which I probably had.
Oh yeah, I had some of those too. No, mine were still like you. And I was 17, but I still had my Transformers. So, and we had the Megatron gun that looked like a gun. You know,
oh, yeah.
Nowadays you had that thing out in the street, you could get shot.
Yeah, that was funny. I never had the gun. I didn't have the gun, but I did have Shockwave, who was the laser gun.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had, I to this day, I still regret. I was not a rich kid, so I never got Jetfire, the $30 giant white plane. That was like Yeah, the rich kids got that one. I never got that big one.
Oh, that was the best. Yeah. It was a ripoff directly from Robotech, but but hey.
We always got Japanese hand-me-downs, basically.
Yeah. But the other big one, you had G.I. Joe still going on there. Mm-hmm. But the newer toy at the time, was the Fast Talker on the commercials. For Micro Machines.
Yeah, I never had Micro Machines, but yeah, I remember those commercials. That guy was great. If you guys have never heard the Micro Machines guy, go look him up on YouTube. The fastest talker in the world. I love that guy.
Yeah, the toys themselves were, they're still around, but yeah, the commercials were what sold them.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to toys. I really don't know if I was playing with toys by 88. Unfortunately, yeah, this is, if you did this by the year you were 10 or 11, you'd get a lot more hits on toys, but 14 might be a little old.
Nah, we're still playing with toys. We just had to hide it because it wasn't cool.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I had this little fake professional wrestling league I made at home, and I made all my superpowers figures into pro wrestlers. So I'd had them fight, and I had a little cards, and I write cards, and I'd keep storylines and stuff. I remember Hawkman, I made into Hulk Hawkman. He was my hero.
Hulk Hawkman.
Yes, Hulk Hawkman. He was the big guy.
Now they would remake that as a new MCU movie, DC crossover.
Oh yeah. I could sell that tomorrow and make $1 billion. So it'd be great.
Just AI at like everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just have Hawkman be like Hulk Hogan, just coming down and lowering the boom on fools.
So toys, I mean, yeah, the 14 probably was, but I mean, we still had some great stuff, you know, and we still had our things to be played with.
Yeah. It wasn't really a toy, but my big thing at the time at 14 would have been collecting baseball cards, which are not really toys, but my collection was enormous. And every single kid I knew collected baseball cards. We all followed Beckett Baseball Card Monthly to see how much our cards were worth. So that was toys for me in 1988, baseball cards.
It's just translated now to Pokemon cards and Magic cards and all those kinds of things. And people storming Costco's to buy stacks upon stacks of boxes of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every kid's going to collect cards of some sort. And I still have my collection from 88. I handed it down to my son. So
now one category I didn't put in my regular list, but I probably should have. And it ties directly into what you're just saying there, because even I collected baseball cards back then. Mm-hmm. Back then I was a fan of the Cincinnati Reds, but that's mostly because I lived in Ohio at the time. Well, not in 88, but close to it right before then. And I know for you, one of the big things, and this is about pop culture, and this is part of pop culture, is sports. And in particular in you was you were a big little leaguer.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I was hoping you'd bring this up. So in 1987, 88, I was a little dork, and then I grew really tall, and I was the tallest kid in my school. I was 6 feet tall when I was 13. So I was like really good at baseball and basketball. And if you'd asked me in 1988 what I was going to do, I would have told you I'm going to be a professional baseball player. That was legitimately my goal. I was just bigger than every kid. I had faster wrists. I was faster. I had a better arm. I just read up and studied baseball. So baseball was my life when I was 14. And that was the year, like, I had a coach who literally just said, pick your any teammates and I'll just put a team together over the summer. Just tell me who you want on your team, because I was kind of well known in the area. Mm-hmm. So that was my thing in 88. And I never grew again after 88, 89. So everyone caught up and passed me. I was never that good again. But I was so big into baseball in 88. It's all I did. And in fact, when you ask me 88, the very first thing, what's the first thing that comes to your mind in 88? I'm like, well, my favorite baseball team, the Oakland A's, got swept or beaten the World Series by the Dodgers in one of the biggest upsets in World Series history. So my very first thing I think of in 88 is the goddamn Dodgers beat us. And I couldn't believe that. But yeah, baseball was my thing. Baseball was my thing.
Yeah, we've all got our niches. What position did you play?
I started out at first base because I could catch, but eventually, because I was fast and I was smart, they put me in center field. Center field is usually the captain of the outfield. So center field was my thing, and that's what I was mostly known for. So I just loved, I would play baseball every chance I could get. I play wiffle ball out in front with my brother. And yeah, again, I was 6 feet tall playing against little 5'1", 5'2" kids. So it was really not fair. And in basketball too, for about a year, I was really pretty good.
Dunk.
yeah. But I know, again, you never grow again. You have that 1 year where you're like a god in a sport. But it was so cool to have that. And that was my year, 88, 89.
Yeah. I actually, the only sport that I was ever forced to play, you know, was Little League. Mm-hmm. And I was outfield, and I was that guy that stood in the outfield just staring into space because nothing ever came my way because it was too young.
Oh, yeah. You would probably play right field. And I would say, as the center fielder, that's one of my jobs, cover for the right fielder. Anything that's hit over there, run behind him because you know it's going to get past him. So that's why they'd put me in center.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, that's our little sports sideline there. I figured for anybody, you'd be the one to talk to about sports. So.
Oh, yeah. I could go into plenty of sport. It's only really funny because I've described myself like this over the years, that most people know me as a nerd, and I'm a huge nerd. But I never really fit in school. I couldn't find a place because I was too much of a nerd to be a jock. Like, I was really good at baseball, but I was a huge dork. But I was also too much of a jock to be a nerd. Like, all my friends would just be D&D or doing nerd stuff, and I'd be out there playing baseball and being on like the best team. So I never really found a place. I couldn't fit in with either group, and it was an odd existence I had as a kid.
I was kind of the same. I was friends with all kinds of groups, but yeah, I was the nerd geek, you know. I had my own little clique, and we, like you said, we hung around and did our thing, and we were different, but hey, that's perfectly good. And that's why I turned out the way I did.
Yeah, same here. I always joke that I can code switch really well. If I'm talking to nerds, I can talk nerd really well. But if I'm talking with jocks and sports guys, I can absolutely pass for a jock. So it's really interesting that, yeah, I developed this ability to code switch where it's hard to really define what my personality even is because I can fade in and out of different groups.
So you're the movie Split, basically.
Yeah, very close to that. But yeah, that's the movie The Naked Gun. Funniest movie ever, pretty much. The comedy I love because I'm such a big comedy dork, but the baseball stuff is spot on, which I love the baseball stuff. So that's like me in a nutshell, that movie.
Yeah. You're out.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, moving on. Commercials. We had some good commercials this year, some iconic ones, you know, that still are known today, basically, by a lot of us that live through this time frame. Any favorites of your own?
I didn't write any down. You had mentioned you sent me a list and I was looking at them. You said Where's the Beef was still floating around in 88. Is that true?
Yeah. Where's the Beef? Yeah, that one lasted for several years.
Wow. I only remember that from 84. I had no idea that was still going on.
What was her name?
Her name was Clara Peller.
Clara, yeah. Good old Clara. Where's the beef?
Yeah, and then there was a big deal, I remember, where she held out for more money, so they like cut her out of the commercial at a certain point because she got too famous.
I can just see her going to the negotiation and saying, God dang it, I want some more money.
Well, yeah, she's like, I'm the one who made Wendy's cool again. You should give me more money. And they're like, no. And it was like a big scandal. So that's why I'm shocked that 88, they were still using her.
Pepsi versus Coke was still around. You know, the war between those two.
Wow. I had no idea. See, these are mid-80s stuff to me, like the Coke War, the Cola Wars. And New Coke would have been like 87, the year before this, I think.
Oh, yeah, New Coke. That was a nice failure. But we can't talk about that. This is 88.
Yeah.
California Raisins, I heard it through the grapevine, that animation.
Yeah, that was huge. That was the freaking most annoying commercial. I hated that, but it was everywhere, those California Raisins.
Mm-hmm. They had their own show for a little while or something like that. Yeah. Yep. And there's a Nike launched their Just Do It campaign in 88.
Oh yeah. That was a big deal. Yeah. This is all really big stuff. But I'm trying to think, was like LA Gear around that time. I'm trying to think of that. That's one commercial that jumps out from this time period where LA Gear shoes and their catchphrase was, "You're such a brat." And I always remember that. It's such a weird catchphrase.
That one I don't really remember. For commercials, the last one I got was McDonald's started its You Deserve a Break Today campaign.
Yeah.
You know, that one's still, these commercials, you can instantly pop right into your head, you know, and you can sing the song right away.
Yeah, this is very interesting because the younger people wouldn't get this, that you just, if you'd watch TV shows, not because you liked them, but because they were on. That was basically TV most of the time in the 80s. There's only four channels. And the commercials, there's no way to avoid them. They're just on. So they get stuck in your head. So like, as well as I know the Cosby Show, I know You Deserve a Break Today because everyone just knows that commercial. And this, we have this monoculture. But yeah, these, you could mention probably about 10 more 80s commercials. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I remember that one really well because you just saw them.
Yeah. And the thing is that you didn't get to rewatch the show whenever you wanted to, obviously. It was on. And if you missed it, too bad. So sad. You had to wait till summer.
Yeah, unless you had the foresight to record it on VCR, which was a big part of my life back then, recording movies and stuff on VCR.
Yeah, we had a beta in, I think it was 86 or 85, somewhere in there, you know, because it was like much better quality and all this. It was, but then VHS killed them.
Yeah, so you were a beta. So your family was much less cool than mine was because the beta families, I always knew them. Like, no, there was no movies available for beta. It was so hard to get stuff.
Oh, yeah. I became a Laserdisc person too, so.
Oh, yeah.
Right on top of those trends. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a big VHS guy and I always tell people that I used to, any kid who grew up in the 80s knows you want to get as many movies as you can on your VHS tapes. You can watch them over and over. This is kind of how pop culture started in the 80s. And you could fit, if you cut out commercials and all the filler and stuff, you could get sometimes as many as 5 movies on one VHS tape on the 6-hour tape if they were short enough and you cut stuff out. So I was very much a master of storage.
And you probably held those tapes until 10 years ago.
No, still got them. There's no way I'm giving those tapes up.
That's where you get your Norm MacDonald stuff too, right?
Absolutely. I have, at least later in the 90s, but I have every single episode of the Craig Kilborn Daily Show on tape still.
Oh, nice. I don't know if that's a humble brag or what.
That's a straight out brag right there.
Wait, who's Craig Kilborn? That's kidding. Okay, moving on to slang of the time. We had some of the, we give kids hard times for skibbity toilet and all the nonsense they say today, but oh my god, the stuff we had.
Yeah, you know? See, 88 is a different, like, I remember mid 80s slang a little more, and again, 85 through 88, that's a big difference in years. So what are some slang things you got from 88? I'm curious here.
Started out with Valley Girl stuff, so gag me with a spoon.
But that's way earlier than 88.
Yeah, I know, but this is still popular in 88. All right.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody was saying gag me with a spoon in 88, Jason.
Like gag me with a spoon. Yeah. Totally rad.
Oh, yeah. Totally rad, radical, awesome, tubular, gnarly, all that stuff. Sure.
Yep. How about no duh?
No duh. I still say that to this day. Yeah.
Take a chill pill.
Take a chill pill. Yeah. Chill out. That's a big one. I remember surfer slang, especially in 88. I remember, at least where I was in Seattle, every kid wanted to talk like a surfer, which is funny because nobody surfs in Seattle, but all my friends were into like surf clothes and surf slang.
And Billabong and,
and,
you know, all those in the mall, Grody to the max.
Yeah. I see that's before 88.
Yeah. And the last one I had on the list was psych.
Oh yeah. Psych. That's a good one. Psych is a fun one because it's very useful. You can use that. It's like, oh, I'm Mario. I'm from Rhode Island. Psych. I'm not.
Well, and at 14 years old, I think psych would have been one of those semi-sarcastic ones that probably was mostly overused.
Well, yeah. What's funny? Okay. Well, but what's funny about psych is that within a year after 88, between 88, 89, 90, that turned into Wayne's World. Not. Yeah. So that's where one went right from one to the other. Yeah, I will tell you one phrase that was used in my school very heavily, and I've never heard other people use this one. I don't know if this was just a Bellevue, Washington thing, but mass used as an adjective. Oh, that was mass fun. Oh, that was mass cool. Or, oh, we had the mass awesome year this year in school, right? So that's a phrase that I always remember with that year, and I was looking through my old 88 yearbook, and two people wrote sentences that used the word mass like that, like, oh, biology was mass awesome this year, don't you think? So. That was something from that year that I remember.
That one I didn't quite get. I was in California in 88, so it was a lot of that Valley Girl and surfer slang too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's this is definitely an 80s thing. I some of the Valley Girl stuff crossed over, maybe not so much in my school, maybe where you were in California. We always joked in Seattle, we always got whatever was popular in California would get about 2 years later.
Yeah, that's how it was when I moved from California to Colorado. And Colorado was way behind on everything.
Yeah, California is the forefront of pretty much all pop culture at all times. Just people need to know that.
Moving right along, I got different fads of the year, unless you had more slang.
No, because once again, I wasn't really talking to other kids or interacting with people other than playing dice games and baseball cards. So yeah, I wouldn't have known the hip slang stuff.
You would have been, oh yeah, I got a nat 20.
Exactly. Yeah, I know my D&D slang. I know to roll for initiative and stuff like that.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
And it was a little late because 85 or so, or 84 was when D&D really, or 85 I think it was, came out.
Oh yeah, no, I was big into D&D, but it's well before 85. This is late 70s.
Trends of the year, fads of 88. You know, things I had listed here that slap bracelets were big.
Yeah, I wasn't cool enough to have a slap bracelet. I never even saw one of those.
They were around. Reebok pumps, you know, that you could pump them up. You know, that
oh, was yeah, absolutely. I was not cool enough or rich enough to have a Reebok pump. Yeah, those are the ones you pump up the air in the shoe. Yeah,
yeah. I was. Our family was as well, not rich enough to have Reebok pumps.
Yeah.
I wonder how much those would go for on the market these days as the first Reebok pumps. You know?
Oh, wow, yeah.
With the sneaker, whatever, the sneaker heads.
Yeah, you know? What else you got for trends now? I know I'm interested.
Mall culture, you know, hanging out in the mall.
Yes. I grew up at the mall. I lived at the mall. I lived in arcades. My parents would just drop me off at the mall as a kid. I'll be back in 4 hours. I had to kill some time. So yes, any 80s child grew up in the mall. And what's interesting is I'm sure you would agree with this. I would barely ever spend a cent in a mall. You could just spend there 4 hours there for free. And it was a nice safe place for a kid to hang out.
Oh, heck yeah. But except you said arcade. So yeah, I spent some money.
Yeah. Yeah, if you got really good, you could make like $1 or $2 last a couple hours if you played the right games. But in general, I'd hang out in bookstores like Beat Alton Bookstore or Walden Books and just read books for free. I read so many books when I was a kid.
Oh, same here. I was Walden Books was my haven. And when I got my first job in 1990, that's the first place I went was Walden Books. And I bought a bunch of books.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this is. There's no way to discuss the 80s without mall culture, but it often gets described as a consumerism, just people buying recklessly. I barely ever spent a cent. It was just a place for kids to hang out, and there was a lot for free stuff to do and just people watching, and just it was a nice environment. So, yeah, Bellevue Square in Bellevue and Crossroads Mall in Bellevue, Washington. These were my second homes in 1988.
Yeah, and like you said, parents just drop you off, you know. These days, it's like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're safe in there and nothing bad will happen. Like, if you have a couple bucks, you can get an Orange Julius or a Cinnabon or something and just, yeah, walk around, browse in the stores, read books, find your friends. It just, I love the mall culture. I wish that came back, that third space where people can go to hang out.
Oh, yeah. Nowadays, you go to a mall and it's like the cheap, you know, stuff from, you know, China and like, you know, the maybe two big stores, but everything else is like the lowest level of shop there is.
Well, yeah. And plus it's just a ghost town. It's just empty and depressing and there's no bookstores anymore. It's nowhere near as fun as it used to be, where the mall was always crowded and it was just, you'd always see people you knew there. It was basically like a town center, like a community center.
Yeah. And you said, I mean, and I go back to arcades once again, but oh, the arcades where I live, you put the quarter on the screen to say you're up next. And they had, that was the first time they had the gun games, you know, so the guns that you could shoot at the screen kind of thing and stuff. And oh yeah, that was great stuff back then. Star Wars, you know, Star Wars game.
Oh. Yes. See, I remember 88, and you and I might have different opinions on this one, because I think we talked about this earlier. I remember 88 is kind of the downslope of video games, the downslope of arcades. Like, I spent a lot of time in arcades as a kid, just being a mall kid. And I'm thinking like 81, 82 through 84, 85. That was like the golden age of arcades. So by 88, I remember it was kind of going downhill. It wasn't really the games I liked anymore. So like a lot of people say this is the rise of video games with Nintendo and shooters and stuff. But I always think of 88 as it was kind of past. It was a past fad by then.
It was still the place to be, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you could always kill. Again, if I had $5, I could spend a couple hours in an arcade. I just know what games I can make last on one quarter.
Now, one thing you brought up in our conversation before, too, is that the other big thing about arcades back in the day, they had one thing that was not limited at the time in regards to what people could do in the arcade.
Well, there's there's many things, but I remember specifically one thing for me was trying not to get my money stolen by the older kids because it was kind of chaotic sometimes. But what are you talking about?
Smoking.
Yeah, the smoky arcade. Everywhere was smoky in the 80s. Arcades were no different. And I'm trying to think, I'm kind of surprised they didn't have a no smoking policy, but yeah, they were generally pretty smoky and you'd always just breathe that crap in.
Yep. That's why we are the way we are today.
Oh yeah. I will tell you, I had a little hustle and I don't know if I was still doing this in 88. This is more of 85, but when Dragon's Lair came out, that was my game. I mean, that was an unbelievable game. All you had to do was memorize patterns. It wasn't really reflexes or anything. You just had to know which pattern on which screen, and they'd throw screens at you randomly. And it was a hard game for most kids to figure out. And there was a couple of screens that were really hard. So I learned how to win Dragon's Lair when I was 10 in 1984. And I just kind of hung out by the machine. And if other kids needed help getting past a level, I'd say, if you give me a quarter, I'll help you get past this level. So I had a little scam where I'd make a lot of side money. Again, I'm just in an arcade. I'm killing time till my parents can pick me up later. This was a little scam I had to get a little extra money on the side, just help people get past the game. So that's what I remember.
Nice. Yeah, Dragon's Lair was 50 cents too. So I was like, oh, yeah, you got to be serious about playing Dragon's Lair.
You did. I want to hear one of my other scams. This is when I was a little younger, that a lot of kids would come in and put a one quarter in, expecting it to work like every other video game, and it didn't. You had to put the second quarter in, and they'd get mad and they'd go storm off to talk to the manager. And I just slip in there and put the second quarter in so I could play for 25 cents. Suckers. I was a little con artist at 10 and 11. Yeah.
Some other fads of the year. Boom boxes were still big, you know. These guys carry on as big of a boom box as possible.
Yeah, I was a little too white of a suburb kid to have a boom box with my Weird Al, so I don't think that was going to happen anytime soon.
Cranking up Weird Al, walking it. Yeah. So you're saying that if you didn't have a boom box, you most likely weren't a break dancer.
Yeah, I probably was not doing a whole lot of break dancing at 14 as a white kid in Seattle. But yeah, it was still hanging around. I actually went to a break dancing demo once in Seattle with my grandma, which is the funniest thing. Your grandma's taking you to a break dancing show.
Hey, Grams.
Yeah. I wouldn't associate breakdancing with 88. That seems a little earlier. I'm guessing anybody who was still doing that by 88 was not especially cool. That's my guess. 88, I associate definitely more with Rick Astley and stuff like that, and Belinda Carlisle, less with the boom boxes and the breakdancing.
Okay, so some big names, celebrity names in 88. Michael Jackson was still, of course, super popular. You know, he was the king of pop.
Hey, who's he?
Madonna.
Just kidding.
Sorry.
I said, who's he? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. You kids these days.
Madonna. Madonna was going through her probably super controversial phase, one of her super controversial phases around then.
Oh, yeah. We didn't have MTV back then. I remember moving from California to Colorado. We moved out here in 88. And one of the hotels had cable and they had MTV. And Madonna was walking around at that time with her her top that was like, I don't know what you call it. It's kind of see-through, kind of, sort of. I can't remember what they're called. But yeah, that being a teenager and seeing that was like, oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, I think Madonna was banned pretty quickly from my house as a kid. I'm not sure, Like a Virgin is what my parents wanted me listening to at 10. She was still kicking around in 88. Yeah, Tom Cruise, 88. I think Cocktail came out that year. This is a year after Top Gun. He is the coolest thing ever for most boys my age.
Yeah, and Rain Man, yep. Yeah, Winona Ryder, you know, Beetlejuice was her big thing, and she became the cutie of the time.
Yeah, she wasn't really my thing, but I knew who she was. I was more of a Jennifer Connelly, that type, Heather Langenkamp, not Winona Ryder. But yeah, she was a big deal.
I think every male around during the 80s was a Jennifer Connelly a fan. I think as a requirement, you had to get your man card. You know, Jennifer Connelly was like number one on the list.
Yeah, if you saw Career Opportunities or The Rocketeer, you would not forget Jennifer Connelly. Although I will say, in 88, this is only a couple years after the Goonies, I was really big on Cary Grant, the Andy, the redhead. I thought she was really cute.
Huh. Interesting. That's not one that jumps straight to my head, but I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cary Grant. I had different types. Also, let me throw out Tamlin Tomita from Karate Kid 2. So I definitely had some favorites in 88.
Oh, yeah. Nice choices. Mm-hmm. Let's see, other big celebrities. Eddie Murphy was bringing out, like you said, Coming to America was huge. And that was the first movie that had him doing multiple roles, I believe.
Yeah, and that was his first really kind of mainstream one. Like the stuff he'd done before that, Trading Places and 48 Hours, were a little R-rated, a little racy for kids. Coming to America, they softened him a little bit. They're trying to make him more mainstream, to the point that in high school in 88, I remember this, in December maybe, I forget, we actually watched that in school. Our history teacher let us watch Coming to America in school, which unheard of nowadays to watch an R-rated comedy in school. We had to get permission slips, but that one was considered acceptable enough for kids. And that was a really big deal, that Coming to America.
Let's see. Arnold Schwarzenegger was still at the height of his popularity.
I would argue he's big, but he's going to get bigger later because we're not to T2 yet and we're not to True Lies and stuff. So, but he's big. He's, all the boys in my class loved Predator and Raw Deal and Commando. These were big deal of the kids in my class. Yeah.
He had a series of them, several in a row, that were just huge.
Yeah, Predator in particular. I remember that one. Yeah,
sorry, Predator, of course, is one of the greats. Whitney Houston, you know, she was big.
I would have vaguely heard of her in '88, but I know she was big. Yes.
Yeah. And then Kirk Cameron from Growing Pains, you know, for the ladies, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, Kirk Cameron was a big deal. Yes. You know, one celebrity I want to mention here, like you're talking about people that were big in the news. There was a story that really affected me when I was a kid, and I always think of this. In 1988, in February, the little girl from Poltergeist, she died that year. This is Heather O'Rourke.
Oh, yeah.
And I always remember just what a sad story it was. She had like an intestinal blockage that was undiagnosed, and she basically died because everything back, she got sepsis. But she died in February of 88, right after she filmed Poltergeist 3, I think. And I always remember that was a big story. And that one jumped out at me when I was looking at news stories of 88. February 1st, 1988, little 12-year-old Poltergeist girl died.
Yeah, and it's the curse of Poltergeist. You know, they're always talking about the people that died on Poltergeist and stuff.
As they say. Yeah, I don't agree with that curse. A lot of it's BS. But yeah, the older sister died too. And then Julian Glover, the preacher, he had cancer when he was filming it. So it's not really a curse, just those three.
And maybe it's the show that gave him cancer.
Well, he already had it when he was cast, so.
Well, maybe it was the day he got cast.
I don't know, Jason. Whatever you, are you writing a book on the Poltergeist curse? Sure.
Yeah. I'm digging deep here.
Yes.
Okay. I think, I've got arcade games here. We already talked arcade. But last thing I've got for categories here is what we were wearing back in those days, what our clothes were. And oh my gosh, if you look back at yearbook photos now of 88 and things, it's painful.
Well, I like to say I'm always in fashion because I've never changed my clothes, that I wear a t-shirt and shorts every single day of my life. And I pretty much do to this day still. And that's what I was doing. And I love that because my middle school was really chill. They let you wear shorts at school, which a lot of schools won't. So yeah, if you look at my 87 to 88 and 88 to 89 yearbook, all it is t-shirt and shorts, usually some kind of white t-shirt with a sports logo on it or something, or some funny phrase, and shorts. And in 88, and like I said, all the trend among my kids in my class was surfer stuff. So it was like Hawaiian shorts and surfboard shorts and stuff. So it's all white t-shirt and surfboard shorts. That's all it was in 88.
So you didn't upgrade to jorts at any time?
No, never. I've never changed. I'm, out of all the people who have not changed since they were 14, I am right at the top of the list. I'm exactly the same person.
That's great.
But yeah, the stuff that were trends, like Ray-Ban sunglasses for Tom Cruise and popped collars, I never did any of that. It was just shorts and t-shirt, functional, so I could play baseball after school, and that was it.
You party animal. Mm. I'll bring up real quick the fashions that were popular in 88. Again, some of these might be a little bit still earlier, but we had acid wash jeans.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had a pair of acid wash jeans. Shoulder pads.
Yeah, for girls, not for guys.
Well, you know, neon everything, you know, so everything was neon.
Yeah, my stuff was usually brightly colored, but I didn't go all the way neon like some kids did. But I do appreciate the neon culture that was big at that era. I like bright colors.
You never go all neon.
Never. Yeah. But I had lots of green, bright green. I had green shoelaces. I had green shorts. Everything was green on me. I love bright Kelly green.
I was just adapting a Tropic Thunder quote there.
Oh, yeah. No, I get it.
Let's see, leg warmers, scrunchies, fingerless gloves. You know, Madonna and Michael Jackson wore the fingerless gloves.
Yeah, I wasn't nearly cool enough to pull off fingerless gloves.
Come on. You weren't in the Breakfast Club, you know, and wearing the fingerless gloves.
No, if Weird Al didn't wear them, I didn't wear them.
Hey, he wore them in the fat video, though.
He did, but I still wasn't that cool because he was mocking someone cool.
The other ones are high top sneakers and oversized jean jackets.
Yeah, a lot of kids had these jean jackets, the denim jackets. I wasn't really into that. I didn't like that. The high top, I played basketball, and they always said when you play basketball, high tops were better for your ankles. They gave you more support. But I didn't like them because you lost flexibility. So I tried high tops a couple times. I just didn't like them. So I tried to get low-cut shoes at all times.
Yeah, I was pretty much the same way. I had high tops very briefly, and I'm like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think I skipped on the video games. We kind of already talked arcades, but there were a couple of good ones out that year. But, you know, I'll just glance over them real quick here. Mm-hmm. Since we talked about the NES and stuff, Contra. And the reason I bring up Contra is because everyone knows the cheat code. You know the cheat code?
I don't. This is too young for me. I never played that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, my. You don't know the up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, BA, start?
No, I've never played Contra. Let me put this in context for people. So 88, so I've been through my arcade phase. I grew up in arcades. This is like 81 through 84. I grew up in arcades. By then, I'm done with then. And this Nintendo video game system comes out. And to me, that's for little kids. Like, I don't want to play that. It's like my neighbors that were 10 would play that. I was still in 88 playing. I had my Commodore 64. And I had a lot of games on there, like baseball simulations and one called the Adventure Construction Set, where you'd create games and D&D games. So I was playing a lot of Commodore 64 at the time. I never got into the Nintendo. To me, that was more for the younger kids.
Yeah, I got a Nintendo for Christmas from my uncle and aunt. Mm-hmm. And we got this box in there. And this is one of the very, very few times I took a sneak peek, you know, so I did mm-hmm. the whole cut the tape just perfectly, lift it just high enough to see what was inside, retape it, you know, mm-hmm. that whole thing. So, yeah, we had an NES.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and most kids had NES. Like I said, I was a weird kid. I didn't really fit any patterns of kids in the 80s, but definitely in 88, I was big in the Commodore 64. I was trying to perfect my game on a game called Jumpman. I was trying to perfect California games, Summer Games, Summer Games 2, Winter Games. So, big Commodore guy still in 88.
Yeah, Commodore 64. I had the Atari ST.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone had some kind of home computer. That was the thing back then.
Okay, and then the last two I want to bring up real quick here. Arcade games. We had Altered Beast, which mm-hmm. was a big one. And then for the home system, I think it was Splatterhouse, which was the first, I think, R-rated game ever. You know, it's still one of those sought-after games in different used shops these days.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with either one of those at all. I've never even heard of Splatterhouse or whatever.
Okay. So we've come pretty much to the end of things here, I think. Unless you have something was there anything that we missed covering 88 pop culture or anything like that?
Not in pop culture, but I have some personal stuff. If you want to just hear what kids were doing in 88 that
absolutely
weren't normal. So my big thing was I had created a fantasy baseball league in 86 in sixth grade in school that I used to have this dice game called APBA where you roll the dice and you'd have player cards. It would basically re-simulate a baseball game. And I created a league in my school, in my middle school. And that's what I would have been known for in 87, 88. I was the baseball guy. So I had this league I created called the League of Champions, and all my friends drafted teams based on real players, and you'd roll the dice, it would simulate. And so that's what I was really big into in 87, 88. I was the baseball guy, and I kept up with this fantasy league all the way up to about 2002, so about 14 years. So that was a big part of my day back then, getting everyone's draft pick, who are you picking, then rolling the dice with my brother playing the games, adding up all the stats by hand. I was a big baseball stat guy. And what's funny is fantasy baseball became much bigger later in the 2000s where everyone started doing this rotisserie stuff. But I was doing that at 13 back in 86 and 87. So I was way ahead of the game as just a baseball nerd fan.
You should have started a whole site for it and you created the whole genre and then you'd be rich.
I could have, but that was the thing. There was no websites back then in 86, 87. This is just something I do through school, and it's all on paper. I'd add up every tally by hand. So it was an enormous amount of time that I used to do back then, but this was what I was known for in 88. I was this weird baseball stat nerd guy. Here's the other thing. Yeah, go ahead.
We've all got our loves. We've all got our passions. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that is my thing. I'm not embarrassed about that at all. I just love stats and numbers and baseball stuff. I just love everything. But the other thing is in 88, my... I'm kind of embarrassed about this one, but this is very much what kids in 80s might have done. is that we love the WWF, pro wrestling. That was big. My friend Brian and I loved all this stuff. And he had a video camera at his house, which not a lot of kids had. And we decided, what if we made our own fake pro wrestling league where we played characters and we'd act out the matches and we'd videotape them. And he'd use his editing software to make like pro wrestling episodes. And so we had this thing called the SWA, the Superstar Wrestling Association. And we'd bring all our friends in there and my brother. And yeah, so we have like to this day still 12 full VHS tapes of all our SWA matches and all the angles and all the storylines. And we had all our characters and it was hilarious. And I just love stuff like that. You just do because you were bored in the 80s and we were creative. And my friend had a video camera. And if your friend has a video camera, the sky's the limit.
Oh yeah, my friend had a video camera in 88, his name is Scott Brown, and we made Jaws, I think it was your Jaws 4 or Jaws 5, The Spawning, mm-hmm. You know, and so yeah, we made a little, you know, movie of Jaws, you know, like just for fun, in the middle of the dry California, you know, suburbs.
Yeah, a lot of shark attacks in the California suburbs, in the desert.
Well, you know what happens when those Sharknadoes hit, I mean, geez.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's one thing I want to get across, that we just didn't have a lot of entertainment back then. I mean, there was stuff around, but like certainly nothing like the internet or phones that'll take your attention 24 hours a day. So you had to be creative. And man, a video camera was the greatest thing ever. We just had so much fun just making stuff. And we were the only ones who ever saw it. And I remember my friend Brian's mom was laughing at us once. She's like, just wait until your girlfriends see those movies someday. They'll be so embarrassed. And I remember laughing. I'm like, there's no way we're going to have girlfriends one day. So joke's on you, lady.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Just fun stuff like that in the 80s. Yeah, I loved it.
This has been a great recap. And this is I'm super happy that you're here for this first episode. I couldn't have thought of anybody better, since I've had the pleasure of being your guest over at Staff Picks 4 times now. Mm-hmm. And the first 5-time pick. sorry, I had a little something on my throat there. You know, but Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is a thought. Anyhow, the thing is, though, is that I truly appreciate your time on this. This has been a fantastic rehash of 88. Thankfully, you know, this is not too far from when I was 14. So mm-hmm. I do remember a lot of this stuff. And I do remember how things were going at the time. So it's fun to rehash some of these old memories. I've been smiling half this episode, you know, like, oh, yeah, that, you know.
Yeah, we could have gone another hour. I just want to point that out to people that Jason's cutting this off because he has to end the show, but I could keep going. I love reminiscing. I love just talking about the 80s. This is an interesting premise for a show, because 14 is like the transition between when boys become men, when you become a little more grown up. And like I said, I was 6 feet tall, so I was a big dude back then. But yeah, 14 is like the transition between a boy and a man. 88 is the transition kind of between the 80s and the 90s. You're starting to cross over into In Living Color stuff in that culture. So yeah, this is a fascinating idea for a show, and I'm really happy you had me on, and this was fun. I was smiling too.
Excellent. That's what it's for, you know, just have some fun and shoot the bull and all that. So mm-hmm. Mario, I appreciate your time. I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up here. And if you want to hang around for just a minute, we'll talk afterwards.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got to go do some baseball dice rolling games. So I'm kind of busy, but yeah, no, that's fine.
That wraps up our first episode covering 1988. So I want to say cowabunga, time travelers. That's going to do it for this ride in the Tubular Time Machine. Thanks for cruising back through the raddest years with us. We hope you had as much fun as we did cranking up the nostalgia, reliving those gnarly tunes, iconic movies, epic video games, and all the pop culture goodness that made growing up totally awesome. Major shout out and mondo thanks to my weekly co-host Mario for another righteous trip down memory lane. Your stories and vibes make this retro journey even more bodacious. Want to keep the party going? Hit us up on social media. We're talking Facebook, Instagram, maybe even a little MySpace just for the LOLs. And don't forget to cruise over to tubulartimemachine.com, where you can catch past episodes, send us your memories, or suggest a year you want us to fire up in the flux capacitor for next time. And hey, if you're digging the ride and want to help us keep this retro machine rolling, head over to buymeacoffee.com/MrAz, Mr. M-R, and then R-A-Z. Your support helps fuel future episodes and keeps the good vibes alive. Until next time, keep your mixtapes fresh, your VHS rewound, and your vibes totally tubular. Catch you on the flip side, dude and dudettes.
Hey there, dude and dudettes. It's time to rewind from neon nights to that vintage vibe.
Dates, tapes, arcades, butterfly clips.
We're cruising the past with totally racked tips.
Crank it up.
Always rad.